Under consideration tonight, we're going to finish out a little bit of this prophecy in Daniel chapter 9. And I feel like I've started, stopped this so many times, and then I'll end up getting into kind of falling down the rabbit hole. There's so much information that's found in the book of Daniel. But tonight, I want to look at the 70-week prophecy. And I'm going to tell you, this is probably one of the most controversial chapters maybe in all of the Bible. But I believe it's one of the most important chapters in the Bible. Because so much of it, so much of the Bible hinges upon Daniel chapter 9. And so if you can imagine like the spoke of a wheel. So imagine a hub right in the middle of a wheel. And things are going off in every direction. That's almost how I visualize Daniel chapter 9. That put Daniel chapter 9 right there in the middle. And then see how many things branch off of it. And there's the book of Revelation. It's very, very heavy in Daniel chapter 9. There's the crucifixion. There's the Lord's Supper. There's the Feast of the Lord's. There is the Year of Jubilee. There are things we read about in Genesis and Exodus and Isaiah. And it just keeps branching off. It's a very, very deep and profound chapter. I will say it is very misunderstood. And there are a whole bunch of different opinions about what this prophecy means. So it is my goal in about 20 minutes tonight, I'm going to tell you what I think the 70-week prophecy, what it represents and what it stands for. Now, I'm going to tell you, you may not agree. And there may be many that don't agree. Most of the things that I've come across, I found a real good sermon by Jerry Dickens online. I found a real good sermon on Let the Bible Speak by Brett Hickey. I'm going to tell you, I don't agree 100% with what they have to say either. And I'll kind of tell you where our differences are, mainly with the idea of the numbers and timing, how things match up. But for the most part, we're pretty secure, pretty straight on it. If you're in the House Bible, it's on page 1293. So you need to turn to Daniel, the 9th chapter. And that's what we're going to discuss for a little while this evening. The 70 weeks prophecy begins in verse 24. It's actually the words of the angel Gabriel, and he is speaking to Daniel. And so we're going to look at verse 24, 25, 26, 27, and see if we can get some understanding of this 70 weeks prophecy. Before we go further, let's go to God in the Word. We'll turn to Daniel chapter 9, beginning in verse 24, the 70 weeks prophecy. Verse 24, 70 weeks are determined for your people in your holy city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. And this one verse has so much information in it. One of the previous studies that we did kind of took each one of these six and broke it down, because each one of these six, I believe, directly points to Jesus. This is messianic. Each one of these, to finish transgression, to make an end of sins, reconciliation, all of these are pointing to Jesus. So I don't want to do that at this time, but I do want to notice up here at the top, 70 weeks are determined. And then he says, this is for your people and for your holy city. Remember, these are the words of the angel Gabriel. And he is speaking to Daniel, giving him this vision of what's going to happen in the future. 70 weeks. Now, that gets kind of confusing. If you have a different translation of the Bible, I have the New King James Version, it may not say 70 weeks. In fact, it may say 77s. And that's one thing that's kind of hard for us to wrap our mind around in this day and age, because here in our society, in our culture, we like to think of decades. We like to think of things in 10-year sections. I have my radio, Sirius Radio. You turn it on to channel 5, that's the 50s on 5. And then you turn it to channel 6, it's the 60s on 6. And channel 7, it's the 70s on 7, and so forth. We like to think of things in terms of decades, every 10 years. And we also like to think about centuries. And so we may have, this is 2021, so last year in 2020, you may have seen a list on some TV show, the most influential people of the last decade, or the all-decade NBA basketball team, or whatever you might find. But we like to think of things in terms of decades and centuries. The Israelites did not. The Israelites like to think of things in terms of sevens. And everything was a cycle of seven years. And then you would have kind of a break after, when you got to 49 years, that was called the year of Jubilee. And then you started over again. You had cycles of seven. Everything was based off of seven. So this 70 weeks oftentimes is translated as 70 sevens. Again, 7 days in a week. I believe this just means a set time appointed by God. Now, a lot of people will try to place more emphasis, especially because of a prophecy that's found in the book of Ezekiel. And there's a prophecy in Ezekiel where Ezekiel was told to lay down on one side. And he was told that he was going to stay there just laying down in the middle of the street. One day was to equal 1 year. And so the nation of Israel had committed this horrible atrocity for this many years. Well, Ezekiel was told to lay down for that many days. And so people say, well, 1 day equals 1 year. And if that was good enough for Ezekiel, then that's probably good enough for Daniel. And so a lot of folks have gone in and said, well, this 70 sevens, okay, now let's go 70 times 7, that's 490 years. Because that would be 490 days. A day equals a year, 490 years. I think that's kind of dangerous a little bit. Because then what a lot of folks have done is, and it's very, very coincidental, you start looking at the years and going backwards and putting time with it, and then you kind of find some historical events, and they match up pretty closely to some very, very important events that are biblical events from the crucifixion. You march it backwards 490 years, and you start seeing what happens. You can get very, very close. And so some people are very, very rigid on their numbers. And they look at 1 year for 1 day. And so here we go. We have to march back this many years. And then we find out what happened. That's where Jerry Dickinson and that's where Kevin Presley and I kind of differ a little bit. I don't think we need to be quite so secure on the years. Because I know that God uses numbers all sorts of ways. God rounds numbers. Sometimes he uses round numbers that haven't been rounded. I don't know if that made any sense or not. But just because a number is a number doesn't mean it's a number. Sometimes there's some symbolic nature to it. For example, I was thinking about Paul Collins' lesson that he was talking about judges. And he was talking about Gideon. Do you remember how many men came up with Gideon the first time? It was 32,000. Because it said after the first test, 22,000 of them went home and 10,000 of them stayed. Was there exactly 10,000 men on the dot? You think there was exactly 22,000 that went home? Or is that rounded? Common sense tells me it was probably rounded. I mean, I guess there could have been exactly 22,000 people. It might have been 21,994. We round that. We said it was 22,000. Sometimes numbers are rounded in the Bible. That angel of the Lord came through one night and wiped out the Assyrians. You remember how many of the army he killed? I believe it was 185,000. Is that exact? Was it 185,000 to the man? I doubt it. I would guess that's just a nice round figure. No different than what we do when we say the United States lost 58,000 men in the Vietnam War. We didn't lose exactly 58,000 men, but that's just, we round it. Other times in the Bible, you see numbers that are round. I remember Revelation talks about the 144,000. Is that a rounded number? Is it exactly 144,000? Is it really 143,994 that John rounded up? No, probably not. It's symbolic. It's symbolic. It probably has to do with 12 times 12 times 10 times 10 times 10. But no sense getting into all of that. But I just know that God uses numbers different ways. Sometimes he's specific. When he says David picked up 5 stones... David picked up 5 stones. So, and you got to kind of read the context, I think, to see, is this an exact number? Is it a rounded number? Or is it a symbolic number? And that's kind of the issue that we have to do here. The 70 times 7, is that exactly 490 days, which means it's exactly 490 years? I don't know. Some people say so. I don't necessarily think so. I also remember those exact numbers being used by the Lord. You remember one time Peter came up to Jesus and said, hey, Lord, how many times do we need to forgive somebody? And he throws out a number. 7 times. And remember what the Lord said? Hey, up to 70 times 7. He said, do it 77. So he used the exact same numbers. Is that an exact number? Is that a rounding number, or is it symbolic? And I would say in that case, just as in this case, I think it's symbolic. So we have this 490, the 77s, whatever that represents explicitly. But he says it's talking to your people and to your city. Your people would be the nation of the Jews, the Israelites, or we can call them Jews now. Your city would be the city of Jerusalem. And specifically, the temple that was housed in the city of Jerusalem. Here we go, Daniel 9 and 25. Here's where we really start our prophecy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 70 weeks, or seven weeks rather, sometimes they'll say seven sevens, and 62 weeks, the street shall be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. And so this is the beginning of this 70-week prophecy. You're going to see it's divided into three distinct parts. The 7 weeks, and then we have 62 weeks. I'm a math teacher. 7 plus 62 only makes 69. So if we're going to get to 70 weeks, then we have to have a 1 week period at the end. 7, 62, and 1. And for whatever reason, that is how God has, in this message to Daniel, it's divided into three sections. The 7 weeks, 62 weeks, 1 week. Put it all together, we have 70 weeks determined for the people and for their city. So now we've got to kind of figure out where all of this starts and what's it mean and where does it end and is it 7 weeks? Is it 70 times 7? And that's where things get a little bit confusing. But we do know the beginning because he says that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem. He says that's where the 70 weeks prophecy is going to begin. So that begs the question, when was the command made to rebuild Jerusalem? Remember, Jerusalem had been destroyed, had been wiped out by military. It was a command that was given. It was actually a couple, but the one that is most likely the starting point is found in the book of Ezra. In Ezra, the first chapter, we read about the command of a man by the name of Cyrus. And Cyrus, it tells us, was the king of Persia. And so after the Babylonian Empire fell to the Medes and Persians, Cyrus made a command to rebuild the city. It said, the word of the Lord by Cyrus, king of Persia, in his first year, by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth the Lord God of heaven has given me, and he has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is among you of all his people? May his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel. He is God, which is in Jerusalem. And there's the command. There's the command to go back and restore the city of Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple and to rebuild the walls of the city. Well, now we've got to do a little bit of time searching in history. And we find out the Babylonians kept very, very good time records. And put it into our time phrase, Cyrus took over in what we would call 539 B.C. It says it was in the first year of his reign. He took over in the fall. So that tells me the beginning point of this prophecy has to be either 539 or 538 B.C. And that's a pretty standard date. You won't hear a lot of disagreement about the starting point of the prophecy. Now, there are other proclamations. We read later that there was a man, I pronounce it Darius. I've also heard it said Darius. That Darius actually sometime later, some about 60 years later, reissued the proclamation of Cyrus. That they kind of found that somewhere in the old annals of the books. And they said, oh, the Jews were supposed to be allowed to go. He reissued the same proclamation. But this was only one proclamation, and that was by Cyrus in the year 539 or 538 B.C. That's going to kick off the beginning of this 70 years or 77's prophecy. We can also see another landmark, okay? And that's until Messiah the Prince. Well, we know who Messiah is. That's Jesus. Some people disagree with that, but I'm not getting into that. I just discredit people who say Jesus is not the Messiah. There's too many other references to it. So we got to ask ourselves, when did the Messiah appear? Does that mean the birth of Jesus? I don't know. Most scholars will think Jesus, they thought he was born in 1 A.D. That's why they called it A.D. And then somehow we kind of messed up. It's really 4 B.C. Or you might see 3 B.C. So is it the birth of Jesus? Is it the baptism of Jesus? Is it the beginning of Jesus' ministry? When would we say the Messiah appeared? And I tend to take it probably towards the first of his ministry, especially when he was baptized. Remember, the dove descended down upon him. I'm going to use that ballpark. I can't nail it down exactly, but most scholars believe the ministry of Jesus began in about AD 26, and that he was crucified in about AD 30. Some push that a little bit, AD 29, AD 33. Somewhere in that ballpark, though, is when the Messiah appeared. So here we go. We got a time frame now, at least. Approximately 538 B.C. to about AD 30. That's about 568 years. And that, according to Daniel, is going to cover the first 69 weeks of the prophecy. Remember, he said there was the seven sevens and the 62 weeks. I'm going to read that again from verse 25 of Daniel 9. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. So there's where we get that time frame. Now, I've seen a lot of people try to do a lot of gymnastics with that year right there to try to make 568 fit into the time continuum, and it does not fit. I don't care what you do, it does not fit perfectly. You've got to kind of do a little bit of smoothing. That's why I don't hold too tight to the day and the day equals a year. You just can't make it fit. But you get pretty close. It's pretty actually extraordinary when you look at how the dates line up. So here we go. We got our 70 weeks, 7, and then 62. And at the end of that 62nd week, the Messiah is going to appear. And that kind of sets some bookends for us. So Daniel 9 and 25, again, he says, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublesome times. We read all about the troublesome times. And I just kind of flash this up there. Go back some time and read the book of Nehemiah if you want to read about the troublesome times that they had trying to rebuild the walls around the city of Jerusalem. Nehemiah came in, and he was trying to lead this great building project. He had problems left and right. The people were complaining about taxes. They were complaining about how they didn't have enough food to eat because they were paying everything to rebuild the walls. We're introduced to these three fellows right here, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, who will always be remembered as the three that tried to stop the building of the wall. And they did everything they could to try to prevent the walls of Jerusalem to be rebuilt. And then we read about this guy named Shemaiah, or whatever, how you pronounce his name. He tried to trick old Nehemiah, hey, how about we just hide? Let's just go somewhere. Let's just hide in the temple until all the bad stuff goes away. And that didn't work either. There was trouble all the way. Remember the story about how they would build the wall, and on the other hand, they'd have a sword? Because they had to be ready to fight off whoever came and tried to prevent them from building the wall. That's what Daniel means when he says, even in trouble sometimes. So here's a little timeline. We're going to keep adding to it. There's the decree of Cyrus, about 538 B.C., and there's our 7 weeks. That first 7 weeks is in reference to the rebuilding of Jerusalem, restoring the temple, building the walls. That's what we read about in Ezra. That's what we read about in Nehemiah. That's when all of this took place, and then Jerusalem was restored. History tells us it's about 444 B.C. So that's roughly 90 years. That the 7 weeks, probably about 90 years. Again, I'm not going to get into 1 day equals 1 year. It's just kind of an indefinite time period. Galatians says it like this, the fullness of time. And that's what I think it means, that it's on God's time. When God was ready, the temple was going to be restored. And that's what happened. And so then we get into the 62 weeks. And that's going to run all the way to around AD 30. Somewhere in that ballpark, the coming of the Messiah. Now, I know 62 weeks is a whole lot longer than 7 weeks. And so I don't think that's any coincidence that this time period is much, much longer than the 7 weeks. I think that's important, but again, I don't think we need to get really bogged down on the numbers and do they fit exactly in the chronological order of the calendar. I don't think it's that important. This is just, it's God's time. So 69 weeks have gone by now. The coming of the Messiah is our ending point for this first 69 weeks. Daniel 9 and 26. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And so again, I think that's kind of plain. It really helps us to see what's going on. So we have the 7 weeks, the 62 weeks. He says, after the 62nd week, Messiah shall be cut off. So what does that mean? What does that mean that Messiah was cut off? And when was that going to happen? And this is the most controversial part of all of this. The premillennialists have just butchered this to no end. When does the 70th week start? And that is just a huge issue. If you any biblical prophecy, you'll come across that. When does the 70th week start? And according to this, it says it's after the 62nd week, Messiah is going to be cut off. There's an old Three Stooges routine. Moe asked Curly, what comes after 75? And Curly says 76. To which Moe responds, now that's the spirit. Which is a stupid little Three Stooges line. But it's almost the same idea. What comes after 69? 70. And that's exactly what it means. What comes after 69? 70. So after the appearance of the Messiah, that's when we start the 70th week. And he says during the 70th week, after this, those are 69. When we get into this last week, it says Messiah would be cut off. So what comes after 69? It's 70. Premillennialists don't believe that. They believe there's a big old gap. And they believe the 70th week of this prophecy hasn't happened yet. They're waiting for Jesus to come back and reestablish a kingdom in Jerusalem. It's not going to happen. The 70th week has already began because it happened after the 69th week. Pretty obvious to me. So what's it mean that phrase, cut off? Well, here's a couple examples. Isaiah 53 and 8, which we know is a messianic prophecy, says he was taken from prison and from judgment, and who will declare his generation? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of my people he was stricken. So this idea of being cut off is a really interesting word in the Hebrew. It appears to have reference to covenants. It's almost always with a covenant. And you remember the old story about how you used to have to cut an animal in half? And if you made a covenant with someone, you would cut them in half, and then you would walk through the middle of those two pieces of the carcass. You would have to cut them. That's kind of what it's in reference to. So I pulled this out of Genesis 9 and 11, one of the first covenants, I guess the first covenant, and I will establish my covenant with you. This is God speaking to Noah. Neither shall all flesh be cut off anymore by the waters of a flood, neither shall there be any more a flood to destroy the earth. Remember, put the rainbow in the sky? So when he starts talking about cut off, it nearly always has reference to a covenant. It's the same word that's used to talk about circumcision. Because it was a cutting off that was in reference to a covenant, the Abraham covenant. So when we start reading about covenants and cutting off, it's the same concept. So it says Messiah is going to be cut off. It doesn't say he was going to be killed. It doesn't say he was going to be executed. I think there's a reason it says he was going to be cut off. Because now we're having to talk about a new covenant. And that's exactly what the Lord brought with him. So let's add to our timeline now. So at the end of the 62nd week, we have the coming of the Messiah. I don't know if that's his birthday. I don't know if that's his teaching, his baptism. That's why I don't really try to put a year into it. And it says in the middle of it, in this last week, that Messiah was going to be cut off. So what is that in reference to when we talk about the Messiah being cut off? Or the Messiah being killed or losing his life in the place of a covenant? Well, here we go. Luke 23:33. And when they come to the place called Calvary, there they crucified. And the criminals, one on the right hand and one on the left. And then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And I think that passage points directly to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. It's in the middle of this last week. Messiah said he was going to be cut off, but it's specific, but not for himself. To me, that clears up anything, that's talking about Jesus, but not for himself. Jesus was a sacrifice. 1 John 2:2 says he is the atoning sacrifice for our sins. And not only for ours, but also for the sins of the whole world. That's from the NIV version. And then there's John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Jesus was the sacrifice. He was cut off. He was killed. But he wasn't just killed without reason. He was killed to be the propitiation and part of a covenant. And that's very important. And that's why the words cut off are used. So Daniel 9:26 continues. But he says, and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end of it shall be with a flood until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Well, who's he talking about here? What city are we talking about? Well, we already figured that one out. This is Jerusalem. Okay, so he's talking about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary. Okay, that's the temple. And so they've already seen the destruction of the temple once. Remember, Daniel's already seen it once when the Babylonians came through and they destroyed the temple and they took over Jerusalem. But he's talking about something in the future. Okay? Jerusalem is going to be destroyed again. The temple is going to be destroyed again. So we kind of talked about the temple the other night. The young men wept, or the young men danced, and the old men wept. Kind of the same idea here. The temple's in ruins right now. And Daniel is being told that there's going to be a time in the future where the city is actually going to be rebuilt. The temple is going to be rebuilt only so that it can be destroyed again. What are you talking about? Well, that's got to be Rome. The Roman Empire came through in AD 66, started a siege of the city of Jerusalem. It was in AD 70 that the temple was destroyed and the city walls were breached and Jerusalem was basically razed to the ground. That's what he's talking about. So now it seems to me that we have another historical event that's referenced here to help give us a bookend on where this prophecy is actually going to end. We know the 62nd week ended when the Messiah appeared. And now we see that this last week is going to end with the destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the temple. And we know that that occurred by history. The battle started in 66 AD, ended in AD 70. There was a fellow by the name of Titus, and he marched his troops in and destroyed the city. Is Titus the prince? I don't know if that's him or not, but that's who history records. He was the general that led his troops into the city of Jerusalem. So now I've added a little bit more to our timeline. Okay, so we got the Cyrus decree until Jerusalem was restored. That's the first, the 7 weeks. Remember, it started with a section of 7. Then we had a section of 62. Those 62 weeks were going to encompass everything that led to the coming of the Messiah. And then we have the last week. Instead of the middle of the last week, Messiah was going to be cut off. And then we have an ending point now, the destruction of Jerusalem, which is about 70 AD. And so now we see how this 7-week prophecy all fits together. Daniel 9:27, then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. So now we're talking about this final week of the 70-week prophecy, which is so debated in the religious circles. And I got thinking, covenant with many. Where have we heard about a covenant with many? You think of a verse or a phrase. But what I always want to do is, before I get too much into history, I want to see, does the Bible have anything to say about it? Let the Bible be its own commentary. And I got thinking, you better believe it. This covenant with many in this last week, it's mentioned in the Bible again. Matthew chapter 26. It's the Lord's Supper. It's the Lord's Supper. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread. He blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat. This is my body. And then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. And Jesus kind of uses the same terminology, that there was going to be a covenant that was going to be for many. The Jews did not like that phrase, for many. Start looking up for many in your New Testament. You'll know what it usually refers to. Not just Jews, but Jews and Gentiles. And they did not like that concept that this was going to be not just for the Jews. It was going to be for many. Hebrews 9. pretty much start anywhere in Hebrews in about chapter 8. And you can apply pretty much any chapter to this prophecy of Daniel. And I pick Hebrews 9. Verse 12, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood he entered into the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. Verse 15, and for this reason he is the mediator of the new covenant by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. Not just the Jews. It's those who are called. There's many. The Jews did not like that concept. The book of Hebrews, though, explains it very well, that it's no longer about the blood of bulls and goats. It's about the blood of Jesus. Chapter 9 and 27 continues, but in the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. The final blow to the Jewish religion and to the Jewish way of life was the destruction of the temple by the Roman armies of Titus. There were no more sacrifices after this point. There were no more offerings. And they're done. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's never been another sacrifice made in Jerusalem since this day, according to what the law of Moses said. It's over. The Jewish way of life is over. The Jewish religion is over. They don't celebrate the feast the way that they were told to. They don't celebrate the Sabbath the way that they were told to. There are no more sacrifices because there's no more temple. And so they did. The sacrifices came to an end. The offerings came to an end. And they're not going to return. They'll never return. So now keep going. Daniel 9 and 27. And on the wing of abominations shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. And so here we get to this last passage. And I want you to note a couple words. It's abominations and desolate. Because Jesus is going to tie this all together and leave no doubt what he's talking about. Okay? This idea of desolate is really a neat word. Desolate implies almost the image of a desert. There's nothing there. There's nobody to help you. There's nothing to do. Imagine being stranded like you see in those movies sometimes. They're all crawling out by the desert and they're just walking, can barely go. They're stumbling. They have no water. And they've just got dirt and sand all over the face, and then eventually they just fall face first into the sand, and that's it. They're desolate. There's nothing left. There's no one to help them. And that's kind of what that word desolate implies. And he said, you're going to be desolate. He also talks about abomination. And so let's try to tie those two words together very quickly, and we'll bring this to a close. Who is desolate? Who was I referring to? Who was going to be desolate? And Jesus tells us. On the last week, after the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, the last week of his life, it says Jesus goes up and he's kind of looking out over the city of Jerusalem. And he's looking out, I suppose, over the temple. And he says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Matthew 23 and 37, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So they were desolate. The nation of Israel was desolate. The temple was desolate. God, the Spirit of God wasn't in the temple anymore. God didn't accept their sacrifices anymore. The nation as a whole was desolate. It was like they were just wandering out in the desert and they couldn't survive. In fact, right before this, Jesus had given a prophecy, or a parable, I should say, and he talked about this vine dresser and how they kept attacking anybody that was sent to him. Remember the story? Then finally he says, well, I'll send my son to him. Certainly they won't attack. They won't hurt my son. And he sends the son, and they kill him. And he says, you know what? It's going to be taken away from you. That kingdom is taken away from you and given to another. See, the Jews, they were desolate. They had nobody left. They had everything taken away from them. So when Daniel starts talking about those that are desolate, he's talking about the Jewish nation. And that's exactly what it's in reference to. The next day, Jesus has another conversation with his apostles. And it's Matthew chapter 24. It's talking about the destruction of the temple. They're all looking at the temple and they're looking at the architecture. And Jesus makes a statement about, you know, there's not going to be one stone left upon another here. And so the apostles are like, you got to explain this to us. And so he does. He begins talking to them in Matthew chapter 24 about this coming destruction. He says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. That's what we've been talking about. Daniel 9 and 27. When you see the abomination of desolation, Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads it, let him understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And they knew what that meant. When they saw the troops gathering around Jerusalem, Jesus told the Christians, get, go, flee, run. And that's what they did. The Christians left. And so Josephus records, historian, that the Christians weren't hurt in the siege of Jerusalem. It was the stubborn Jews who refused to leave the city. They were wiped out by the hundreds of thousands. The Christians were not harmed. So this abomination of desolations, that's going back to this prophecy. So it's going to tie everything together. Jesus tied the impending destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the temple in the year AD 70 with the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9. And it fits everything together in a perfect little timeline. So what's the meaning of the 7 weeks versus 62 weeks versus 1 week? I said I don't really get caught up in the time. I don't really get caught up in 7 times 70 and 1 times 7. I don't think that it matches that. But I think it does symbolically show how rapid the succession of events would be. So that last week, it was 1 week. That 70th week, things were going to happen very, very quickly from the time that the Messiah appeared to the time that he was cut off and to the time of the destruction of the city. It was about 36, 37, all up to 40 years when that occurred. It was within one generation. You know what Jesus said? Matthew 23:36, assuredly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. I think that's why he used 1 week. Not that it was one times seven years, but because it was one generation. And there we go. There's our timeline. Cyrus, to Jerusalem being restored, 7 weeks. Here's our 62, until we get to the coming of the Messiah. And in this last week, from the coming of the Messiah to the destruction of Jerusalem in the year AD 70. If you know any premillennialists, they will not agree with what I just said. They will completely try to stop things right here. It's called the gap theory. And they'll put a gap, and they'll say that the 70th week has not begun yet. Don't fall into that, because then you're falling into the idea of the millennium and the return to Jerusalem, which is just, it's not biblical. But there's my thoughts on the 70-week prophecy that is found in the book of Daniel. I said 22 minutes. I lied. It's about 30 minutes. I apologize. That's the best I can do. We never have to close, though, but having a song of invitation. We can help you anyway. We stand ready to assist.